Today on the Debt Free Mom podcast, we have a very special guest who is returning the favor by coming on my podcast after I got to come on hers. We have Kelly, the car mom. And Kelly, I'm so excited to have you here.
I'm thrilled. I mean, you got to be like one of my favorite influencers and podcasters. So I feel like I can't believe I get to be on this podcast.
When I had mentioned something about my car a couple months ago, and the flood of DMs that I got that was like, you need to go see the car mom. You need to follow the car mom. It was Care Creates Contentment. I was cleaning my car.
Yeah.
And then they were like, she just said that. She just said Care Creates Contentment. And as soon as I started following you and listening to your podcast, I was immediately like, why have I not been following you for years? Like, where have I been? I've been under a rock because we talked about this on your podcast, but not only I think do we have a lot of things in common about our, like what I say about money and what you say about cars, but we just have like weirdly similar lives outside of that.
Totally.
So you have four kids. I have four kids. We live in the Midwest and we're both the oldest of mm-hmm. five. I think that was the thing that was so crazy to me too. Yeah, was like, I can find a bunch of moms who have four kids in the Midwest, but also being the oldest of five was crazy. So you asked me a question on your podcast, your first question that I thought was a great one. And I want to just straight up steal it and ask you, for those who don't know you or aren't familiar with you, where does your expertise and passion for the topic of moms and vehicles come from?
Sure. So people are, I think, sometimes really surprised to know that I actually have very deep roots in the automotive space. So my grandpa and his brother started a used car lot in 1957 in St. Louis, Missouri. My dad and his brother grew it to a multi-store franchise and started to get awarded like actual manufacturers instead of just used cars. I started selling cars in 2016. It was like, of course, I'm going to join the family business. And then the only problem with the family business, though, is the hours of selling cars and the hours of retail, especially automotive retail, are really demanding. So when I was pregnant with my second, I was just kind of looking at, you know, working at a dealership and the Saturdays and the evenings. And I'm like, this is not sustainable. Like, I feel like I have, you know, price of two kids in daycare. I was like, I feel like I have to give up like my career and like my love for, you know, the automotive industry to focus on being a mom. And it's so funny, like looking back at that time, because the answer was just right in front of me. Like, I just had to combine the two. But when I was, you know, finally deciding, okay, I'm probably going to step back, my husband, in kind of, I think, a last-ditch effort, was like, well, Kelly, why don't you just try to focus on the moms? Like, maybe you can just develop, like, a sales funnel, and you can just be the mom in St. Louis who sells to moms, and maybe your dad will let you make your own hours. And I was like, that's a good idea. If all my lead generation comes from, like, my park playdates, and I'm just selling cars to moms, I kind of was like, maybe I'll be like this, kind of like the realtor model instead of the, you know, direct sales model, basically. But as soon as he said that, I was like, oh, that is a good idea. And I think it could actually be way bigger than St. Louis. So I really just kind of looked at my resources, which was, you know, six car lots and a baby and a pregnancy and an average knowledge of car seats. And I started really casually just like reviewing cars for moms. And I was really inspired by a lot of those Facebook groups that go around. Because whenever there's, you know, we're all in, I'm sure some, like, I'm in, like, a Peloton Moms Facebook, Moms of Boys Born in 2020, like, just, like, the most random groups ever. And they're always like, hey, what's a good mom car? And so people were always asking, and the answers were always just so different. And I'm like, what is a good mom car? Like, how do all these people have these different opinions? So that's where I kind of noticed that there was a huge need for it. And I've really just since then, I've fallen in love with all things car seats, cars, and, you know, car buying.
Yeah, I love that. And you're a certified car seat tech too, right?
Yeah. So as soon as I started, I quickly realized, and it's almost the thing that made me give up, to be honest, because the car seat component of being the car mom is the hardest part. Mm. Like, truthfully, car seats are so complicated. There's so many on the market. They have very strict rules on what works, what doesn't work. And it's very hard to create content and create resources in that broad of a sense for people, because everyone has different kids, car seats, and cars. And I'm trying to make content relevant for everybody.
Yeah.
So I quickly realized I was like, wasn't going to give misinformation, obviously. So I wanted to make sure I felt confident what I was saying. But I also needed to start figuring out this car seat piece. So mm-hmm. about a year in, I became a CPST, and now I've been one for 4 years.
Okay, awesome. So why do you think there was, or what was the gap in expertise on the car side where moms would show up and be like, I just don't think they understand what I'm looking for? Is that just typical across the board, or was it something as because there were more vehicles to choose from now than there used to be? What gap was there?
Well, I think I always say, and I'm very proud of the fact that I feel like my content and my information can't be Googled. Like, it's very, it's not black and white. It's not cut and dry. It's not going to tell you what the hip width of the 2023 Ford Explorer is, because that's only like a piece of the puzzle. But instead, we really look at how car seats actually fit, not just, again, how you would think they would maybe fit, or like what the specs would say, how they actually fit. And then more importantly, like how the car functions. I think that people would go look at these cars and they'd be like, oh yeah, it's got 8 seat belts, so it's an 8 passenger car. And then they would quickly find out, you know, they'd buy the car, they'd get sold, they'd get it home, they'd have their third kid, and they don't even have room for their third kid in this 8 passenger car because of just mm-hmm. how the vehicle's designed. So I think it's really a heavy emphasis on the daily functionality that sets kind of our content apart.
Yeah, I think one of the coolest things that you have out of everything I've seen is those car maps of here's the vehicle, like mm-hmm. looking down from the top, and here's all the possible car seat combinations. Like, you're not going to, like you said, you're not going to find that somewhere else where it's, oh, if I want to keep this vehicle, not just when I have this one kid, but if I want to add a second or third, trying to think down the road. We certainly don't want to be feeling like we have to replace our vehicle every time we have one more kid. And so I love that, like, thinking long term, thinking like what the possibilities are, not just how am I going to use it right now, but like how could I use it as the kids grow or as the family grows, is so helpful and practical.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I think when I sold cars, I saw a lot of people come in with inequity, which means like they owe more on their car mm-hmm. than what it's worth. Now, I worked at a BMW store, so a lot of this was just like, a lot of my situations were like people just, this is what they did. Like, they bought mm-hmm. cars, they sold cars, they traded in cars. But when I started realizing that families were also doing this, and families were doing this because they didn't have a choice, because they just bought the wrong car. So, you know, it's one thing when you have inequity because, you know, you decided that you wanted the new model, or like you don't like red anymore. But families were like, oh, it's twins. We need a new car. We bought the wrong car. So I feel very passionately about making sure families think about every year of ownership with the car and make sure it's going to check the boxes for all of those years, because inequity situations are really tough to get out of.
Yeah, especially for a family. If you're talking about like you just had a baby and now you also are upside down in your car, is really challenging. So for somebody who just became a mom or is maybe expecting their first, I think one of the things that you think about before you've had kids is like your car. Will your car work? But you haven't experienced having that baby yet, or having to drive around that car seat, that stroller. Do you, I've heard you talk about this before with new moms. What should somebody who's like expecting their first, what should they do while they're waiting, while they're prepping? Should they run out and buy a bigger vehicle automatically? What should that new mom do?
9.9 times out of 10, I think that you should keep the car you're currently driving for your first baby. Almost every car, unless you have a very tight two-door coupe, can fit a rear-facing infant seat fine, like completely fine. Okay, yeah, your husband's, you know, has to move a seat up a little bit, he'll live, it's fine. I think that way too many expecting moms fall into this trap of thinking they need a SUV or a mom car, and like their Toyota Camry from college isn't going to cut it, but it is. And I think when you delay that purchase, you will have such a better sense of how your family is going to grow. We call this like forecasting your family growth, which I know is a very difficult thing to do because a lot of it is in God's timing, not our timing. Mm-hmm. But so don't, for lack of better words, put the cart before the horse. So just make your current car work. And if you are tight, you know, we have like resources on our website to recommend car seats that are more compact front to back to give you more room if that's the reason you want to upgrade. But if I always like to look at my personal example, and although it'd be a little dramatic, but I had 4 kids in 5.5 years. And if I think back in 2019, like I would have never bought an Expedition Max. Like, that would have felt crazy. Like, why do I need an Expedition Max for my 1-year-old? But so then what would I have done? I would have bought a Hyundai Palisade and driven it for 2 years and then be upside down because now I have 4 kids.
Right.
And now I'm trying to trade out. So it's like, that would have been a bad call. So either, I mean, if you really need a new car, or, you know, it's time to replace it, I would really just think, okay, here's what, and really I would probably schedule like a consultation, because I think it's hard when you're not a mom to even understand like what the car seats and the strollers and all that space takes up, mm-hmm. but really just think through the years. But ultimately for a first time mom, I would delay the purchase. It's like the one thing you don't have to buy when you have a new baby.
Right. Don't put that on your plate. Even not just the car. There are so many things that I think about before I had my first where I was so convinced that I absolutely mm-hmm. needed X, Y, or Z. And then as soon as the baby came, it was like, I don't need that at all. And so that's mm-hmm. not a huge deal when that applies to a wipe warmer. But when you're talking about a car, then like you do, totally. You just don't want to make that kind of mistake.
Right.
And you don't know how you're going to be as a mom, right? Like the way you are before you're a mom is just not the same as when you are a mom. And so I think I probably pictured myself as an SUV mom before I actually was a mom. And now here I am mm-hmm. in my like 10th year of driving a minivan, you know? And so you just don't know until it actually happens. Okay. So mm-hmm. along those lines of if you're in the market for a car, I want to talk about new versus used, because this is not actually something that I have any expertise or experience in. I've never bought a brand new car. So the thing the question I get asked a lot is something along the lines of, isn't a newer car going to be better, more value, safer? Are those maxims that people have in their head? Is there any truth to those, or where do we fall on new versus used?
Great question. And I want to, before I answer it, I want to give the preface of, I've built a platform over like empowering women. I just always want to be your cheerleader. So I just think there's some people who are like, hey, I've always wanted to buy a new car, and I'm going to say go off. Like, mm-hmm. you know what? I just always want to be the cheerleader for my audience. So if you want new, like, I'm all about it. And I think there are situations where buying new makes a lot of sense. I think where we're in a very interesting point with the car market right now is everyone thinks they want like slightly used. They're like, oh, well, I'm going to buy like a car that's, you know, 1 to 2 years old, like just has some miles on it. But those are like some of the worst deals in the car market right now, because those are still incredibly expensive because used car prices are up so much, and they don't qualify for new car interest rates. Mm-hmm. So they qualify for used car interest rates, which are a lot higher, and they don't have a warranty. They don't have a full warranty like a new car does. So that's like the worst car you could buy right now.
Yeah.
So I tell people, a 2023 is probably not the best deal. I'd probably go like 21, or I would maybe run the numbers on a new one, because they're just like the gap really isn't there.
Yeah.
Let's start with safety. One, I feel like, in my professional opinion, since 2018-ish, we've kind of plateaued in a good way on, I think, the crash technology that's available on some of these cars. Mm-hmm. So I feel like a loaded up 2018 has a lot of the same, if not identical, safety features to a brand new 2025. So I don't think you need to fall into the notion like the 25 has the latest and greatest and it's so much safer. I don't think that's the case. I think they, you know, they all have blind spot now. They all have frontal collision warning. They all have automatic emergency braking, depending on trim level. But like those cars are available. Those features are available on used cars. In terms of deals, used cars are so fun because they depreciate so much slower. If you are the kind of person who wants to get a new car every couple of years, and a lot of my audience is, you know, I'm going to drive this minivan. I'm going to get out of the car seats. Then I want to be done with this thing. I tell them all the time, go buy a used car.
Yeah.
Like buy a used one. It depreciates so much slower. You buy a new one, it's tanking within the first year. So mm-hmm. if you're the kind of person who likes to upgrade frequently, go buy used cars. They're more cost effective. Mm-hmm. Another huge benefit of used cars, and a thing that I'm really passionate about on my platform, is cars over 100,000 miles. I don't know why the cars hit 100,000 miles and people think they're done. I think they're, in a way, just getting started. Like, cars with 100,000 miles on them are, I think, some of the best buys for a couple of reasons. One, they're less expensive, depreciate slower. We talked about that. They also have proven reliability.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're reliable.
New cars, people are like, oh, well, it's new, so it's better. And it's like, new to me also means like untested. Like, how many recalls come out in the first couple years right after a brand new vehicle comes out, because now it's driving on the road and they're finding out what those problems are.
Yeah.
So to me, like, we bought our 2018 Honda Odyssey and it had 95,000 miles on it. And I was like, this means that it knows how to run. Like, it's going to keep running because it's doing its thing. I completely agree.
And I think people also, an exercise I always recommend people to do is they think, oh, like, here's conversations I hear all the time. No, 100,000 miles is too many for me. And I say, why? Well, because I want to keep this thing for 5 years. And I'm like, okay, cool. Yeah, we'll keep this for 5 years. How many miles do you drive a year? Mm-hmm. And they're like, I don't know, 10. And I'm like, so you're going to put 50,000 miles on it?
Right.
And like, in the owner's manual of this vehicle, it has recommended service for 200,000 miles. 200, so like, yeah. Honda says it's making it to 200 mm-hmm. easily. So like, yep. why? So is it too many miles? Because yeah. all you're going to do is put on 50,000 miles on this car over the span of 5 years. I mean, I feel like yeah. this is all stuff that you do in practice as well.
Yeah, I know that when I would talk about the van that I had before my 2018 Honda Odyssey, it was a 2013 Toyota Sienna, and I got in an accident in Alabama, and so it was considered totaled, but it had 266,000 miles on it and drove like a dream. Mm. Like this mm-hmm. 2018 Honda Odyssey does not accelerate as smoothly as that 2013 Toyota Sienna that had 266,000 miles. And I firmly believe that van would still be on the road if I had not busted its radiator because it just, I think there's just so many other factors that make a car no longer safe or no longer worth it outside of how many miles they have. So speaking of minivan, you drive an SUV, I drive a minivan. I know that you do consultations that help people talk through what would be best for them, but I feel like those are kind of the two main buckets that moms and families are considering when they're thinking of upgrading their vehicle is, do we go minivan route versus SUV route? Do you, in all of your consultations and your years doing this and driving these cars to do tours, do you notice any patterns on this family, this kind of family tends to go with the minivan route versus the SUV? Is it like height? Is it sports? Is it the number of people in the family? Do you see any themes around, you know, oh, 5 minutes into this consultation, I know I'm recommending a minivan versus yeah. this family's more an SUV route?
I think truthfully, no. I mean, I did a consultation the other day and it was like a grandma and she's, listen, I don't have, like, my kids are all grown, but I've always driven a minivan, so I want to buy a new minivan. Mm. So I just think, so I think people, I can't say like a solid similarity, but I will say when I have families who are looking for a lot of space and are on a budget, I always suggest minivans because mm-hmm. the problem with the SUV market is the midsize SUVs, which are cars I consider like the Chevy Traverse, the Ford Explorer, the Toyota Highlander, Kia Telluride, Hyundai Palisade, Volkswagen Atlas, like that class of cars aren't, you're always searching for more trunk space in those cars. I don't mm-hmm. care, like, no matter what, for a lot of families, it's never enough, especially with strollers or like weekend trips or anything like that. So if you need the third row and you need a lot of trunk space, you're looking at the full-size market or the minivans. Well, the full-size SUVs are very expensive. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a very big jump. So I think if you're a family that needs a lot of space and you don't want to spend, you know, $65,000, the minivan gives you a lot of space at a lot lower price point.
Yeah. I had a loaner for that, for a Honda Pilot a couple weeks
ago.
Oh,
yes.
And my van was getting some recalls fixed. I had a Honda Pilot and I went to Aldi, bought my groceries and opened the trunk. And I like laughed out loud. I was like shocked at how little space there yeah. was back there. Like it technically had a third row. It could seat as many people as my minivan could. But I had gotten so like spoiled or accustomed to, I can have yeah. 8 people in this van and I can absolutely load the back of the van with everything imaginable. And it was very surprising to me how tiny
it's
the trunk was.
They're shockingly small. So, I mean, really, yeah, they're shockingly small.
You would only really like want to use the third row for, oh, we're picking up a friend and driving them to soccer practice or something. I feel like if you need the third row to always be up because you have that many people in the family, I can't imagine having that and also having such a small trunk.
Yeah. Yeah.
So one thing related to this minivan versus SUV comparison, when I was on your podcast, I mentioned something about, oh, as my boys get older, I'll probably need to switch to an SUV. And you were like, actually, no, it's not that much. I don't think you're going to get that much space, which was really surprising mm-hmm. to me and informative. So can you talk about that? Because I think we're both in tall families yeah. as well. My boys are projected to be tall. So if I'm driving a 2018 Odyssey and I'm a couple years away from having 3 teenage boys, is it worth my time to look at a bigger SUV just for those couple of years that they're in high school, or is where I'm at probably going to be sufficient?
Yeah, so I think it's truthfully so deceiving, because the big SUVs, like a Suburban, Yukon XL, Expedition Max, they are so much bigger. They look so much bigger.
Right.
But when it comes down to like how the space, and when we look at a car, like a thing that gets thrown around a lot is something called cubic feet. That's a measurement that like the auto industry is very passionate about. I think it's kind of a stupid measurement though, because a cubic foot can be found in the air. So basically that's telling you like how much water you could fill in the car. If you filled every cup holder, every crevice, that's what you could fit. Well, that does not really necessarily tell us how people fit, because it's just a lot of it's made up from like space. So if we look at the actual, you know, leg room, head room, I think you'd be surprised how I'm actually looking at the stats right now. So in a Honda Odyssey, your third row leg room is 38.1 inches. And in a Ford Expedition, your third row leg room is 36.1 inches. So you have 2 more inches of leg room in the Honda Odyssey than you would in the Ford Expedition.
Yeah,
so
I think it's the, I think you have that vision in a minivan of like you're crawling through the back, and maybe you have, like you said, that extra space is actually just for your head, not for your legs.
Yeah. Yeah, but they're probably they're a little wider, so the boys may feel like they would have more shoulder room. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at the end of the day, I'd say you're going to have a couple of tight years, and then they got to start driving themselves. That's what we did. I mean, what did you guys do? Oldest of five.
Yeah, we had, like, so we didn't. I was oldest of five. We had those old, like, Chevy, like, conversion vans that were, like, I mean, it was like a movie theater in there. Our windows had shades.
That's what we had,
and,
too.
Yeah.
That's what
we had. The back row would go down to a bed. There was a button, and then it would convert into a bed.
Love it.
And we had that, and I remember the seats being very plush, like very luxurious, cushy seats. But then, yeah, I turned 16, got a super old Honda Civic, and I became the family chauffeur for all of my siblings' activities and everything. And then, yeah, then we were really only all in the van together for like road trips or something. It wasn't, you know, everybody kind of goes their separate ways, especially as you get a teen driver. So that comment that you made really stuck in my head, because I was like, oh, I was automatically assuming that as these tiny little boys become men, that I'm going to have to switch my vehicle. And so I was like, okay, maybe this Honda Odyssey could see us through into those high school driver years.
I would say so.
Okay, so you touched on this a little bit. I would guess that most people, especially most people in my audience, are more likely to be in the used car market than the new car market. What is going on in the used car market? Like, why is it possible to find a three-year-old car that is like the same and maybe even weirdly sometimes more than a new vehicle?
This is a great question. So the problem is, not to a broken record and blame everything on the pandemic, but during COVID, the auto industry experienced an incredible chip shortage, a microchip. Cars could not be built. Like, millions less vehicles were built in the years of 2020 and 2021 than previous years. So now here we are 3-4 years later. Well, no one leased and no one's trading in those cars, so they didn't exist. So we're kind of just dealing with a trickle down effect of lack of new car inventory 3-4 years ago.
So would you say then that 2-3 years from now, it'll probably rebound and the cars that are now being made will be entering the used car market?
Yeah, I would. Yeah. I think one of the issues is leasing is still just not as advantageous as it once was. And leasing is a really big way to get cars into the pre-owned market. Mm-hmm. Leases only work, though, when manufacturers want them to work. And they're not, just the lease specials we've seen are just not what they once were. I think it's hard. I think inventory has and will get better. Mm-hmm. And we'll continue to have more options. But I also wouldn't live by, I mean, people are like, well, I'm waiting for car prices to drop. And I'm just like,
right, that's probably not going to happen.
I wouldn't really hold your breath. I'm waiting for egg prices to drop. Like, right. I just don't know if that's really how it's going to work. Now, interest rates are like a big topic of discussion, because the interest rates suck right now. So that's, that can be difficult. But yeah, that's one of the reasons why we're not seeing a lot of those cars. And truthfully, I think it's fine, because they weren't very well built cars. Like, General Motors didn't put heated seats in most of their cars built during the pandemic to save on chips.
Interesting.
So don't rush out and buy one and then overpay for it. Go back to 2018 and find a nice, well-maintained car then. That would be my advice.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so, it's just so fascinating. I think it reminds me of I mean, really any big purchase, but you actually have to step, you have to run the numbers, like the actual numbers on based mm-hmm. on interest rates and stuff, because I have seen, you know, we bought our 2018 a year and a half ago. So fall of 2023 mm-hmm. is when we bought our 2018, and we were kind of on the line of, we bought it for 26,000, and we were kind of on the line of, should we just buy new? You know, like we were right on the bubble of it being worth it to just go new. And that was the first time that I had really even been in the market where a new vehicle would have been possible for us. And it was so fascinating to actually run the true numbers, not just my perception mm-hmm. on used versus new, but to actually run the numbers and be like, it doesn't actually work out. It was just mind-boggling to me because, you know, like 10 years ago, it would be, you know, if this is your budget, clearly you buy a used car and there's a bunch out there and you have so many options and at every price point you can find a reliable vehicle. And in that, you know, trying to buy a vehicle in 2023, I was like, there's so few vehicles. And for the first time, I'm looking at new vehicles and used vehicles that are like mm-hmm. within $2,000 of each other.
Yeah. And I mean, again, if you're in that situation, things I would remember about the new car, even if it's more than $2,000 cheaper, you know, run the numbers on what the interest rate's going to look like. I have a calculator on my website. It's basically, you can type things in. So you could type in like what the price is at this interest rate, what the price is at that interest rate. And you can kind of see like how much you'll actually spend, things like that. But run the numbers, and then also take into account warranties, because new cars have warranties included and used cars do not, at least not as comprehensive. So by the time you would add a warranty and, you know, account for the interest rate.
I mean, that's really true, because when we bought our 2018, it was a certified pre-owned and they offered us a warranty, but it was like $2,500. So that right there would bump you up even closer to that new car price.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So for moms who are families who are in that used car market, I know you just mentioned you have a calculator on your website. What are some other, like some of those resources that you have, or just big questions that they need to ask themselves before they walk into a dealership and be like, show me a minivan?
Sure. So I mean, one of my biggest pieces of, if we kind of pivot to actual car buying advice, mm-hmm. I hear a lot of people complain about car salesmen. And, you know, as a former car salesman, I'm like, geez, I was a good salesperson. Like I worked with good salespeople. So why do we still have the stereotype around us? So one of my favorite pieces of car buying advice is to choose your salesperson ahead of time. If you want to be taken seriously, if you don't want to deal with, you know, Chip, who's going to call you sweetie, then you have to put yourself in control of who you work with. So there's this great website I like called Dealer Raider, and it allows you to read reviews of individual salespeople, and then you can select who you want to work with. So you go to the dealership you're going to go look through their reviews, and then schedule an appointment with them right from there. If you just show up like 3 p.m. on a Saturday to look at the Honda Odyssey you saw online, you're going to have the worst car buying experience of your life. And truthfully, it's not the auto industry's fault. You have to take some responsibility for that, because 3 p.m. on a Saturday is the busiest time in a dealership. The good salespeople are not available. Like, I am booked and busy on a Saturday. I was only working by appointments. So you have to do a little bit of extra work to get a good salesperson, someone trustworthy. So that's like a huge tip. I think also really taking your time to test drive and become familiar with the car is really important. I can't believe the people who like test drive it around the block and then are done with it. I want you to test drive it. I want you to try to install your car seats in it. I want you to play with the infotainment system. I want you to test the heat and the air, because, you know, once you sign the papers, I mean, you don't know what's going to happen. I think another big tip is, if you're used car shopping, you have to verify what comes on the car before you start signing any papers. So do not make the assumption that used cars come with mats. Don't make the assumption that used cars come with two sets of keys or with an owner's manual. However they were traded in is how the dealership is going to try to sell them. So that's not a deal breaker, but that's just information that you should know, because an extra key is $250. Mm-hmm. So just be prepared for that. So maybe either use that as an opportunity to ask for some money off the car, or at least take that into consideration as you are comparing multiple different vehicles. So that's a huge tip. I also love asking, like a really pro tip, this is so sassy, is I like to ask for what the RO is on the car when it got traded in, and that stands for repair order, and it tells you what the dealer did to recondition the car when it got traded in. Now this can be really important information, because either they did nothing to it, which could be fine, because I mean it still has to go through your state's inspection. So some mm-hmm. states have a 30-point inspection. So it's still, you know, the tires and brakes and everything still had to meet state. But sometimes you'll find, oh, they replaced all the brakes in this car.
Yeah.
Because, like, they were below. Like, that's important for you to know, especially as comparing to other cars. So if that one is a little bit more expensive, well, it has brand new brakes or it had brand mm-hmm. new tires or, you know, whatever the case is. So I think asking for the RO can be important.
Yeah, on when we bought our 2018, one of the big selling points for us when we went to see it, because it had, like I said, it had 95,000 miles, but they had put brand new brakes, a brand new set of tires, and they replaced mm-hmm. a couple of the seat belts. They said they had a little bit of fraying on them, so they just replaced them. And the list of things they had done to it was very long, and it made us confident not only in the vehicle's reliability, but then also, we're not going to have to be replacing a set of brakes in 2 months or something.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
When someone is car buying, how much do you think they should have in their mind ahead of time what they are looking for versus should they show up to the dealership knowing I'm between a Pilot and an Odyssey, or should they just test drive a bunch of different cars and not rule anything out because they might have a different thought on it once they're actually in it?
That's a good idea. I mean, I think there's some people who need to see every car to make a decision. When I do my consultations, I narrow it down to 2 to 3 options. I think you should go test drive 2 options. Sometimes I give a third, but I like to pretty much narrow it down. And I think there's enough information out there that should be able to at least take cars on and off your list. And that's like my big inspiration for my tours. I don't even really want to make your final decision for you. I just want to take cars on and off your list. I want you to easily be like, oh, that's not enough trunk space. Next. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that rear facing seat doesn't fit well. Next. Because I think that it is, even with the most efficient, best salesperson in the world, I mean, to go to a dealership, make an appointment, give someone your license, have them talk to you, put them in the system, drive their car. Ew, like, I don't want to do that 10 times. Mm-hmm. So I would do it I would go to 1 to 2 dealerships. And I think if you do enough research, you should be able to make your decision. I think also, you know, if you go to any new car dealerships they also probably have other used cars on the lot. So if you are liking your salesperson, be like, hey, what other 3-row SUVs do you have? I just want to look at some other options. Even if it's like not the exact car you wanted to look at, could give just a good vibe for what the Ford Explorer has to offer. I think another really important thing to think about when used car shopping, and I've come to learn a lot of people don't understand this, is car models have body style changes, but it's not every year. Mm-hmm. So I always get the question like, hey, what's new for the 25, you know, Toyota Grand Highlander? And I'm like, nothing. It's the same car. Yeah. Oh, cool. They have a different wheel this year, but it's the same car. So if you're familiar with when the generations are, you can look at a variety of used cars and then you can start focusing on finding the right one. So if you're at a dealership and you know you're interested in a Ford Explorer and, you know, it got redesigned in 2020 and they have a 2022, okay, but it's the wrong color, it's the wrong this, okay, who cares? Mm-hmm. Go look at that one. It's going to be the same one as the 2020 that you might end up buying, and just get a vibe for the space. So I do think it's important to know when the generations of the cars you have looked at are.
I think we're similar in that way, not with cars, but with budgets. Of, I would much rather just help people ask the right questions, make sure you don't have any major blind spots in your decision making, and then move forward with whatever you would like to do, even if that's not what I would like to do. Like you said, I don't want to make decisions for people. I'm actually not interested in that. And that feels like, what then if they don't like it, then it's on me or whatever. I think just having you take this really helpful and realistic approach of, I'm going to ask some questions that you might not think about, or bring up some scenarios that maybe you didn't have in mind when you were decision making, but then ultimately pick the car you love and drive it and be happy with it.
Totally. And I also think, I think too much of the auto industry, and I think why my platform has kind of blown up, is I think women and mothers are tired of hearing about what they should care about and what is important to them in a car. I mean, and no offense to the minivan moms, but all the time I hear people say, well, what? So is a minivan my only option? Or I have all these kids, so I only have to drive a minivan. And I was just like, no, there's so many options. And whatever your reason to buy a car is so valid to me. A very granular example is my sister, who works with me. She loves second row door cup holders. So there's a cup holder in the door. Like, she would probably never own a car without a second row door cup holder. Because then when she's buckling her kids in, she takes her coffee and puts it in the door cup holder. And that would be a deal breaker for her. And to me, valid. I don't need to hear anything else. I am never going to tell you that's valid. Okay, we'll make it work. Where I feel like the other industry is like, oh, come on, really? Blah, 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 blah. Nope, not at the car mom.
Yep.
You don't like how it drives? Fine, me neither. Valid. Like, I will just always be like the champion for women to whatever their thing is, because the industry is so, the auto industry is so annoying because they cater to the 0.1% of the people who are off-roading their cars. Me, my sister and I always talk about this. Every car commercial, they're off-roading. Who's taking these cars off-roading? I know. I don't even, like, I'm being so for real.
Yeah.
I'm being so for real. Like, I don't even know where you go off-roading. And I certainly don't know why you would take a $65,000 Nissan Armada to do it. That's come on, we're going to Target. Call a spade a spade. We're going to Target.
Right.
And I think that's cool. I think that's cooler than off-roading. But the auto industry wants to tell you you're just driving a grocery getter. Not
or everyone's going camping. Like everyone has some giant boat, RV, whatever. And I'm like, never in my life.
I know. It's very interesting that like what the auto industry, I guess, thinks sells versus like what actually sells. It's actually, it's kind of concerning. They almost feel out of touch.
Yeah. No, I love that. And I think I agree with you that I'm sure that's why your platform has grown so much and your advice is so helpful, because you are talking about what does it look like to go to the park with a stroller and three car seats? You know, those are the questions that we need. That's the information I need, is how many grocery bags will fit in this trunk, not can I haul a boat, you know? Okay, last question. I know you said you drive a Ford Expedition Max. Just for fun, what other car besides the one that you drive are you loving right now?
Oh, that's such a good question. I know, because I definitely crush on cars and then I let my crushes go. Okay. I mean, the Chevy Traverse is just having a moment for me. Like, she got redesigned last year, and I think about her daily, probably. Like, it was just a really good redesign. And it really, I'm like, I really felt like GM, like, actually watched my tours when they redesigned her. So I really do think the new Chevy Traverse is going to be a force to be reckoned with in the midsize category. I'm also really kind of crushing on her, like, luxury sister, the Buick Enclave, that also got redesigned. Like, she's kind of having a moment.
I loved is that the one that had the blue steering wheel?
I loved that. Yeah, I loved that. I'm also loving the Kia Carnival Hybrid.
Ooh,
like, okay. I love that we have hybrid, like, a hybrid minivan is always something. A hybrid three-row SUV is, three-row vehicle is fun. Mm-hmm. So I'm liking her. I'm always crushing on people. I'm crushing on the Honda CR-V hybrid. It's so fun, and it's so fun to have the access to the dealer lots, which I think a lot of other car reviewers don't have that.
Yeah.
Because I'll be in 10 cars, and I'll do 10 car seat installations in one day. I'm not just waiting for the manufacturer to send me cars. Like, I'm seeing these cars all the time.
Yeah. I love that.
So yeah, those
I think that's what's so cool about even just following along. Like, I feel like if someone is in the market to buy a car in the next, like, 2 years at all, they should just, if they follow you, they'll just have this osmosis of information by watching your stories.
I would
because
agree.
It's just, okay, you know, like, first we're doing a craft in the morning and now we're sitting in a Buick Enclave, and there's just this, like, I have seen the inside of more cars than I ever have just by daily watching your stories.
Okay, that's honestly such a compliment. And I really try to, on our podcast, we try to talk about the auto industry kind of like a pop culture segment. Like, we are here to gossip about what's happening in the auto industry. And it's just, it's been so fun to see so many women care about, like, what the new Ford Expedition redesign is going to be. Who would have never cared before, but, like, now we're like, will it have a split tailgate? Like, we're all sat. We're all ready to find out.
Yep. The Pacifica third row headrests.
Well, that's the drama. Yeah.
We're
calling them out.
Yeah.
We're calling them out.
And I love the camaraderie of the whole community of, there's just this consensus that they did not ask a mom about those third row headrests.
Well, right. I know. And that's like a whole other topic, but it is kind of crazy when you start to look at some of these cars and be like, who was in the room? If I ever get the opportunity, which I'll be like, just tell me who made this decision.
Yeah.
It's a weird decision.
And I think that you've grown it enough that you are, you know, you kind of joked about, did they watch your tour when they redesigned it? You're at that point where that's a real possibility, which I think is amazing for, like, pushing into that space and being like, okay, these family vehicles, mom is driving the family vehicle 99% of the time. Let's hear what the moms mean. Love it. Well, Kelly, where can people find you if they are not already following you, and especially if they need something like a consultation?
Right. So you can go to our website, thecarmom.com. We also post all of our tours on YouTube. I'm on Instagram every day. And then we're on a podcast called The Carpool on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Consultations, you can book on my website. I think I'm currently booked out till April, but I'm going to try to open up some more spots.
Okay.
Soon.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, if anybody, like I said, even if you're not planning to buy a vehicle in the near future, still recommend following, because I feel I already know that even if I don't buy another vehicle for 5 years, I'm going to have better questions to ask and more information in my head than I do just by following along.
Well, thank you. That means a lot.
Thanks for listening to the Debt-Free Mom Podcast. If you want to join me as a guest on the show, go to dfmpodcast.com. The Debt-Free Mom Podcast is hosted by me, Carly Hill. Music for this episode was written by Kyle Hill. Hit subscribe wherever you're listening to join in with every new episode as we grow our confidence and contentment in our personal finances.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.